Okay, you can start with your name and everything.
Morris Peterson, born February 8, 1921, Bannerman Avenue in the city of Winnipeg. Moved to St. Patel when I was 3 years old. Started school at Woodlawn School. Then went on to Norbury School, where I finished my education there.
Where were your parents born?
My mother was born in Kent, England. My father was born in Belleville, Ontario.
And what did your parents do in Winnipeg?
Dad was a stationary fireman at the General Hospital until 1929, when he was laid off. He was in the First World War, and he had an injury to his knee, which caused rheumatism, one thing or another. And we were on relief for a number of years. I did quite a bit of traveling around the country prior to the war, on the freight trains and that, going out harvesting, one thing or another.
Tell me, you rode the rods?
Yeah, I rode the rods.
Well, how did you manage? I haven't got one guy yet. This has nothing to do with the Hong Kong. But how did you manage financially? How did you manage to eat on the rods? What did you do?
Oh, you, going to the harvesting places, not like we were going to Marwain, Alberta, and on the way we bumped food. Bumped food and the odd store and that, and the butcher shop or something like that, and get some bologna or some loaf of bread.
Where did you sleep?
In the boxcar.
In the boxcar. Now, some of these towns, like if you got off in a small town, did they run you out of town, or did they sort of put you up the road?
No, we were never ran out of any town. We found the majority of the people very nice, actually. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't go right into the center of town, actually. You'd more or less on the outskirts. And the people, as I say, were generally very, very good.
Mm-hmm. You just go to the back door of the house?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, did any town have little relief stations or anything for you guys that you could go to?
The odd one had the Salvation Armies. The bigger, not the towns, the cities. Saskatoon, Regina, they all had the Salians, as we used to call them. Mm-hmm. You go there and you can get a meal.
Mm-hmm. And would they cook you up?
On occasion they would, yes.
And how about, of course you couldn't ride the freight in the winter, or did you?
No, it was far too cold. I just come back from Marwain, Alberta, from thrashing. I got off, and I wasn't doing anything in Winnipeg at the time, and this friend of mine, Ted Ferguson, who was eventually killed in Hong Kong, he got me to go down. My brother was already in. My brother joined September the 6th, 1939. I joined September the 9th, 1939.
Had your brother been working?
No. He had been in the Grenadier Reserves. And my dad also went down and joined September the 12th. He joined the Winnipeg Light Infantry, WLI. We were stationed at Minto for a while, and we moved into Fort Osborne Barracks, and where we took extensive training. We then went on to Jamaica, one company stayed in Bermuda, and they joined us later on.
Where were they stationed in Bermuda?
I don't know the barracks name.
No, but I mean the town.
Right in the main city, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah.
And then they came on to Jamaica to join us later on, and we were in Jamaica for 16 months, looking after an internment camp there. And they always said that they'd have us on the inside sometime.
I guess you really had a good time.
It wasn't bad. We did quite a bit of guard duty, of course. We were 24 on and 48 off, stuff like that. And, but it was really hectic. I mean, we were all young, of course. I was 19 and having a good time. And
your money went quite a ways.
Oh yes.
Did you get that any sicknesses in Jamaica?
Well, I had what they call dengue fever. I think the majority of the chaps got that. And other than that, it was just maybe routine cold or something like that, but that's all.
Did you like the climate?
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
Did you get in contact with any prisoners when you were there? Did you talk to them or anything?
No, not really. You were in towers or just on the side. You didn't really have that much contact with them. But they always, as I say, they always used to say that we were having a hard time then, and they would.
That's what the prisoners used to say to you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That we'd be on the inside someday. We were. And we came back from there, and we were in Winnipeg for 6 weeks, and we shipped out to Hong Kong.
Did you have any idea you were going there?
No, not a bit. We had an idea that we were going east someplace, but as the exact destination, we didn't know. I was in the guardhouse when we went. I was under close arrest.
What? Where had you done?
I'd gone out and didn't come back in. I'd overstayed my leave.
Mm-hmm. And were you married then?
No. And just out for a good time, that's all. Mm-hmm. So I came back and
what was your rank?
Private, yeah. Mm-hmm. Our brother was a corporal. Mm-hmm. My twin. Mm-hmm. But we embarked in Winnipeg, went to Vancouver, and they put us on the Awatea. And there was a little bit of a rebellion at the start because of the accommodations, one thing or another. But they got that settled out in the.
In what way would the men rebel? I mean, what did they do?
There was a little bit of dissension as to the crowded conditions of the sleeping space. It was in hammocks and one thing or another, and you didn't have any room at all, actually. And then the food. Oh, did you ever have lamb for breakfast? Mm-hmm. Well, we did. Most of the time.
And food wasn't your type at all.
No, not really. But of course, if we had known then what if it was to come later on, we would have really enjoyed it, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But we did get an awful lot of, well, they called it lamb, I call it mutton, on the boat on the way over. And
did you enjoy your trip, though?
Yes, very much. I played a lot of poker, and I shot a lot of crap. Made a few bucks, and then we landed at Kowloon, and they took us by ferry across to Hong Kong.
What was your impression of Hong Kong? How did you feel? Can you give me an idea of what mental state?
Well, actually, it was a very, very dirty city, very crowded, and it was nothing to walk along the seawall and see dead babies and that lying in the water.
That we found that quite
repulsive, actually. Mm-hmm. And also, be walking down the street, there was nothing to see, a dead Chinaman laying on the side of the road and that. And it was a very smelly city, I mean, a seaport and that. And as I say, the very, very overcrowded.
And in comparison, Jamaica was quite clean, wasn't it?
Yes, Jamaica wasn't that bad, really. Mm-hmm. And then, well, we had a few nights on the town, of course. And, mm-hmm. and we had quite a battle one night at between the two Canadian outfits, between the Winnipeg Rifles and the Royal Rifles of Canada and the Winnipeg Grenadiers. We had quite a battle one night.
How'd that happen?
We were at the Sun Sun Cafe, and just how it started, I don't know. But it started, and it really went. And oh, the Wurlitzer went down the stairs, and these marble top tables, you know, there's quite a few of those were broken. And, but it finally went back to camp, and you know, there's a few repercussions, not too much.
Were you picked up by USP?
No, I wasn't. And I got back to the barracks a short while after that. I got in a little bit more trouble. I went out and didn't come back in again. I ended up, yeah, for a day.
And did you just?
I came back to camp and I ended up in the guardhouse.
Well, tell me, what would you do when you go out and leave? Just go and drink it up with the guys? Oh,
no, guys and girls.
Oh, I see.
Well, you were with a couple of your buddies, of course, you know.
Yeah, and, you'd meet some nice girls on the way you go.
Yeah.
And, you never got really to know the Chinese or anybody then? You didn't
no, no, not really. Not really.
What'd they do when you went AWOL? They just give you guardhouse duty?
Well, I was in the guardhouse when the hostilities began. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I didn't get anything out of that. He just called us out, and anybody that was in there, you see. And we were taken across to Kowloon, and our company, B Company, or D Company, I should say, and we were acting as a rear guard action for the Indians and the Royal Scots coming out of Kowloon. And we got back by ferry to Hong Kong itself, and set up our defenses there.
What did you have for
armaments?
Yeah.
I had a Thompson's submachine gun, mm-hmm. and majority of them had rifles and that. We had a few Bren guns, a few Lewis guns, and the odd Vickers.
And you've been checked out on those arms, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Yes, we were originally machine gunners. Mm-hmm. And when we joined the Army, we took extensive training on the Vickers and the Lewis at Fort Osborne. And that. The Bren gun was relatively a new gun, but there was nothing to it, actually.
How about the Thompson? Had you taken that work on that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, there's not that much to it, actually. Mm-hmm.
The Vickers, I understand, had to have water in it.
Yeah, it was water-cooled.
Water-cooled.
Yeah.
Tell me, who was your platoon leader, or who was your leader in your bunch?
In my bunch?
Yeah. I mean, who commanded you guys in your fighting in that? Your direct command, I don't mean your, you know.
Well, Stonewall Jackson.
Oh, I see. Is that what you called him?
Yeah. He was corporal.
Was
he was in charge of our platoon. Oh, yes. Very good.
And was he smart about how to protect your guys? And
well, there wasn't that much we could do, really. We were pinned down in Wang Le Chang Gap, and there really wasn't that much organization to it.
Yeah.
And the Japs were up in the pillbox up on top of the hill, and they commanded the whole area, actually. So, we had to pull out. There was 25 of us, 23 of us tried to get up over this hill. There was only 5 of us made it. And we left there. We went down to Wan Chai.
Was Jackson still with you, or was he dead?
Yes,
he was still with us.
We went down to Wan Chai Gap and met up with a bunch more. Their headquarters, whatever it was, and there's a few officers there then. Like up until this time, we hadn't seen an officer. And there's some of the five of us commanded a or just picked up an old car. And we pulled out in that and went down to Wanshai Gap, as I say, and met up with the bunch there. And I seen my brother for the first time then.
What company was he with?
He was with D Company also. Mm-hmm. But we were pretty well all split up. And
your brother was okay?
Yeah, he was all right then. And then we pulled out of there, a whole bunch of us. There's Captain Norris and, oh, I would say about 150 troops, I guess, non-coms and, privates. And there's two of us. We were in the more or less the scouting position of it. We went from there up to Mount Cameron, and Herbie Fortune and myself, we used to chum around together all the time. We were up there for a day and a half, the Japs started to come in there, and Herbie and I were acting as a rear guard position there, and we had a Bren gun between the two of us, and see the Japs coming down the road and that, and we put about five or six magazines into them, I guess, and the Bren gun jammed.
Oh, brother.
So we took out the gas regulator and threw it away and buggered off.
Quick thinking.
And then we went up to Aberdeen Reservoir from there. We walked up there, and we were there for couple of days, I guess it was. I mean, time was, it's hard to speak of time, actually, because everything was happening so fast, and you weren't getting any sleep, or,
yeah.
I mean, and you were scrounging grub where you could find it, you know, anything, mm-hmm. And this was a big thing, it was the lack of the food and everything like that, mm-hmm. And as I said, the disorganization of it was of this world, mm-hmm. And we got to Aberdeen Reservoir, and Captain Bailey was there, and a couple of others, and then it was Christmas Eve, and then Christmas morning, they said that was it, the hostilities were over, so there was nine of us. We decided this wasn't for us, we decided we'd see if we could get out, so we threw away our arms just in case we were caught. And we got through the Japanese patrols and that down to the coast, but there wasn't even a board, let alone a boat. So then we had to go back from there and went up to where they, up to the peak where they had taken all the prisoners and walked into camp and I was there. And we stayed there for a day and a half, I guess it was.
Were you hurt? Were you injured at all?
No, I got a piece of shrapnel off of rock and just hit me on the face here, but there was no it just numbed my face a little bit, that's all. Cut it a little bit, that's all. That's the only injury I received there. Then they pulled us down from there and marched us to North Point Camp, and they brought us down between these two rows of Japanese, and every second one had a machine gun, and they were just sitting, you know, they're very dark, very little, very small, you know, very ferocious looking. And we were inclined to be a little scared, a lot scared, I would say.
Were they good fighters?
They were very good, and they very adept at guerrilla warfare, which we had no training in at all, of course. And they brought us down, as I say, between these two lines. And we knew that they had never taken prisoners in their history before, so we were wondering what would become of us, of course. And anyway, you see these ugly little guys sitting behind these machine guns, and you're really jittery. But we were 2 days on the road, I guess, down at North Point Camp. We got down there into billets and well into There was nothing left of the billets, actually. You're sleeping on concrete floor and one thing or another. After a while, they finally got some rice out. We had that.
Did they search you? Did they strip you down?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
No, not really.
So you had your watch and your money with you?
Oh, yes. We had all that money. We bartered to the Japanese later on.
Mm-hmm.
For food and, you know, whatever we could get. And we were at North Point for quite a while, along with the rats and everything else. And the accommodations, I guess, of course, were very closely packed. And the, they were bothered with, lice was very prominent there. And bed bugs. Oh, bed bugs, they drove you out of your mind. There's nothing you could do about it anyway. And did take our uniforms and that, and gave us, we just had what we had on our back anyway, and they gave us whatever they scrounged around for. And then they took us down to Sham Shapo after a while, and we were there for quite a while.
Did you get sick? Did you get diphtheria?
No, I didn't get diphtheria. We had a very bad epidemic of diphtheria, though, in camp.
Did you have to work with them or help with them?
Yes, I worked in the as an orderly for quite a while with them.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was very, very sick. He had malaria and dysentery together, and he almost died. And I had a few sores and everything like that.
How many men do you think were injured?
Oh,
they were dying pretty fast with diphtheria.
Oh, yes. We were losing, there was 10, 12, sometimes higher a day for quite a while. And they gave us some kind of tests, of course, and they put what they called carriers and they segregated them. Didn't help too much, but...
Were you called a carrier?
No, I wasn't. And
who did this test? Was it the Japanese or the British doctors?
The British doctors.
And they were the ones who said some fellows were carriers?
Mm-hmm. And they said, I mean, they weren't ill-treated or anything like that.
No,
I mean, not any, I mean, in as much as not any worse than the rest of us.
No, but I mean, I just wondering how they could tell if a person was carrier.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't remember what the test was now.
No.
And so we lost an awful lot of men that way. And then the conditions were deteriorating all the time. And of course you had your burial parties every day where the men would have to go out and bury them.
How were you feeling at that time? Were you starting to get depressed, or was this...
No, not depressed. Of course, you always had the rumor that Chiang Kai-shek was coming through on his white horse any day. And this is... I mean, if you really let yourself get depressed, there was no way you were going to come out of it, eh?
That's right.
You had to keep yourself up. I went down to 83 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I went in at 154. And I had quite a hard, bad time for a while with ulcers of the legs and that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Would that be from beriberi?
I don't. It was a lack of a proper vitamin.
Yeah, malnutrition.
Right. Well, I got beat up rather badly. Every time you went down to the ground, they put the boots to you. So you had to get up in a hurry.
Well, what were you beat up for? Passing out
or what? No. On this occasion, there was the Red Cross had sent a bunch of Jurgens into the camp, and they were in bales, and the Japanese issued one apiece to us. And we found out we could sell them to the guards for 5 yen. And there was a canteen in camp, which... anybody with any money could have access to it and buy a little supplement to your food. And of course, we didn't have any money. So they took the rest of them, they stored them in this in the storehouse there, and we found out that it had been broken into, and different people were, Japanese especially, were going in and stealing these things. So there's four of us got together, and we went in ourselves, and we stole three bales of them, which was 200 to a bale. And for my end, I got 750 yen, I think it was. And I didn't sell directly to the Japanese myself. I sold them to another comrade. And he got caught, and he turned me in. And the Japanese sergeant took four of us out that night. Came through about 1 o'clock in the morning. Took five of us out. Four or five, I forget now, but four or five of us anyway, and took us out and beat us in turn, and then we went back to our billets, and then the following morning they had the identification parade, and the Japanese sentries, they were up on orders too, and they had to identify the chaps that they had bought these things from. And the Japanese also asked if the men sold any to them. So came to my turn. They asked me if I'd sold any. I said yes. He said how many? I said 200. So he knocked me down, and then they took nine of us and took us to the guardhouse, and then there was a bunch of them. Really started to work us over.
What did they use?
Jiu-jitsu holds and throws and one thing another. And as I say, as soon as you got down on the ground, they put the boots to you. Mm-hmm. And then, this continued on for about 9 hours. And finally, they stopped the beating, and they sat us in front of the guardhouse in the rain. And of course, we didn't know what was going to happen to us. And along a little bit later on, the corporal of the guard came through and banged every one of us on the head with a steel helmet. And we stayed out there in the rain all night. And in the morning, around 10 o'clock, I guess, they said we could go. So we crawled away.
Did you all survive?
But one chap, he went crazy. He went cuckoo.
Really? He had a breakdown.
Yeah, he went cuckoo over it.
Do you think it was from the experience, or do you think it was from an actual physical blow to the skull?
Oh, it was from the beating, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Did they beat your face and your head and everything?
Oh, yeah, wherever they could. They didn't do too much punching, mind you. They didn't, I don't know whether they didn't know the art of hitting with a fist or what it was, but they didn't actually do too much punching with your fist, but they had to stand there, of course, and they'd get some holes and throw you over their shoulders and one thing another, and then I'd say as soon as you hit the ground, they'd start putting the boots to you.
Did you last in consciousness, or did they manage to keep you conscious?
And they managed to keep us conscious.
So it was just a sort of a fine art of beating to the point not to let you guys pass out, but...
Oh, no, if they could kick you in the head, they would to knock you out and that. Like, this is what happened to Novak. He got down, he couldn't get up, and they really put the boots to him. So he was knocked out.
What kind of chin on this, did you know?
He was, there was Sato, and, Kamloops was another deal altogether. He used to come around at night when you're in Oh, it used to get very, very dark there. And he dressed the same as we were. And he'd come in and enter into the conversation. And as I said, you couldn't see your hand in front of you. It was so black. And as soon as you said anything wrong, boom, you were out. He beat you right then.
Well, then he was very underhanded.
Oh, very, very. And he was in on that deal, too, on the jacket deal and that, of course. And then he was instrumental in beating our Captain Norris. Very fine officer, very fine gentleman. And he really beat him, so he never really actually recovered from it. And then after the jacket deal, they decided they didn't want me there anymore and they shipped me to Japan. Mm-hmm. So I was working down the coal mines there.
Mm-hmm. What was your trip like to Japan?
well, we were down in the hold. Well, he let us up once.
Mm-hmm. How many were you in that draft?
Oh, how many was there? I really couldn't say. I really couldn't say for sure, to be absolutely honest. My brother was with me.
About 500?
Yes, approximately.
I guess that's why they starved you. You didn't weigh too much in the boat.
No. And very, I mean, you're just packed in there like sheep, eh? And I didn't forget how long the trip lasted, to be honest with you.
You must have been quite sick at the time.
Yes, I was at that time. The sores and one thing and another. I was down to 83 pounds then.
Your brother wasn't beat up, was he, really?
No, my brother was never took a beating.
No.
And then we got into Japan, and the place they took us to was a little cleaner, but the fleas were bad there, mm-hmm. And they also lice, but they had the delicing device there where you. You know, a steamer and that, where you put your clothes through and that, which kept them down a lot.
What camp were you shipped to in Japan?
It was Sendai number 2, just outside of 60 miles from Tyro. And there was a big coal mine there. And we were working anywhere 10 to 15 hours a day. We had a quota to get out and that.
What was the coal like, a soft or hard coal?
A soft coal.
And did you get paid for that?
Yeah, 3 cigarettes a day, which was as good as money. I mean, if some person couldn't eat their food and that, well.
How'd cigarette. You make up with your feet in that mine?
With which?
Your feet.
Not very good. That's why whenever I get home, I always take my shoes and stockings off.
Well, your feet bothered you, and your feet bothered you. Can't barely work with bad feet, can
you? Yeah, but then if you didn't work, the rations were cut in half. So we used to carry boy and men down the mines to so they get their full rations and do their work for them when they got down there.
So actually, despite all this privation, there wasn't an unselfish spirit there.
Oh yes, it was. We didn't have anybody really that. Was strictly for them. Well, we had a couple, that was all. They were strictly for themselves, and there's no need in mentioning any names. But the majority, it was if you could help the other guy, you'd help him out.
Mm-hmm. How about the other prisoners, like your knowledge? Do you think they had the same spirit as you Canadians together? Like, were the British as good in their spirit, or do you think the Canadians?
Oh, yes, we had. We had British with us, and we also had Hong Kong volunteers. They stayed a lot more to themselves, mm-hmm. And they had a little more than what we had.
Mm-hmm.
These
Hong Kong volunteers, were they mixed up Oriental and white? Or
Portuguese.
Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So they had Latin temperament.
Yes, I guess you'd call it that.
Yeah, and were they pretty tough too? I mean, did they keep themselves? You know, I mean, did they stand up pretty good?
Oh yes, majority of them did. Majority of them did, and we. Then the the night before we heard the Japanese talking. They said something about Zemba Wari and that, and we interpreted it as such as the war being just about over, but we couldn't we didn't really believe it. And the next morning the camp commandant, when we were on like they had what they call a tenko, you'd have to identification parade and that, and every morning, you see, and he called us out on parade that morning. He said that peace was being declared. He even spelled it out. And then he still wanted us to go down the mine that day. Mm-hmm. And we said, no way. We wouldn't go. So we went, waited in camp for 3 days. The Japanese brought some horse meat in. And we had that, of course. And then the third morning, there was three planes, American planes, Grumman fighters, came over the camp. They'd been looking for a camp, these camps, you see, and they come over and, oh, they did the victory roll over, you know, and I think every eye was wet, because we knew then that it really was true.
I bet you couldn't believe it.
We really couldn't. And then right afterwards, the big transport planes came over and dropped food and clothing. And there was a bit of sadness to that too. Two of the chaps were killed, another one very badly injured by one of the crates falling and hitting them. And things improved a little bit in camp, and then three of us took a walk, went down to Tyro, and scrounged around there. Well, we went in the restaurant, we had crab, and...
Who were you? What three? Name the other
two. There was my brother, there was Charlie, he lives in Trail B.C.
We'll come to you later.
Yeah. Oh, and there's one of the Hong Kong volunteers was with us, too. There's four of us. So, and then we went to a dairy place, and we got some real fresh milk, which was very good. And ran into a couple of girls.
And so you weren't that much trouble with malnutrition, eh?
Well, really, we were, but...
tell me, in the camp, the main talk, I get from the other fellows, I'm putting words into your mouth, but the main talk was food, wasn't it?
Oh yes, food and cigarettes.
Food and cigarettes. And yeah. Where did girls come into that? Or were you two?
No, kids? Not really, not in camp.
No.
No, the girls didn't bother us there.
No, it wasn't a conversation about women. And so, what was... How were the Japanese people looking at you? Was the town you went to eat, was had it been bombed?
Oh, yes. It had been bombed. In fact, it was just 2 weeks before the war was over, the American planes came over and were bombing. They bombed Tyro that day. And I happened to look up and look at them. One of the sentries seen me, and he really knocked me around. You weren't supposed to look at me.
That's silly.
Yeah, really silly, you know. And they just stand at attention and they wail away at you, and they really wailed. Mm-hmm. And well, I took a few beatings while I was there. But
how'd you enjoy that crab meal?
Very good. The best meal I ever tasted. Mm-hmm. And then of course we just walked out. Mm-hmm. And we
did
brought
you pay for it?
No, we didn't have any money, eh? Mm-hmm. And as I say, we went to the dairy place and we got some fresh milk, and then we walked over to this other camp that was not too far away from there, and met a few of our buddies and that, and then next thing we know, we got a couple of guards came from our camp to pick us up.
Oh, I see.
And took us back, and the camp commandant, he spoke English, of course. In fact, he used to teach English over in Japan itself. And he told us we weren't very nice people because we walked out, and he really made it down to us. So then we stayed in camp for a little while longer, and then we shipped out to Tokyo.
Tell me, and one thing I noticed when I asked you this,
days after they'd dropped the food and that, we went into the mining town of Sendai there. The name of the town was Yushima, not Hiroshima, Yushima.
Mm-hmm.
And I got tangled up with one of the miners there, and I really beat him up. And as I say, all the guards and everything that had left, they wouldn't stay around at all, except the camp commandant. He stayed there. But all the ones that had been doing the beating and everything like that had gone.
They disappeared.
Yeah, and the interpreter stayed. He had lived about 23 years in America,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't bad. He did what he could for us, which wasn't very much, of course. And then, as I said, they took us down to Tokyo, and the Americans were very, very good. We were on the USS Iowa for 3 days, and as soon as we went on board, the captain, or whatever they call it, the Navy, the big shot anyway,
mm-hmm.
he said that, told us, he said, anything you want, he said, you just asked for it, he said, you got it. And he said, if you get hungry, he said, you go downstairs. He says, you know, oh, it's battleship was like as big as a city block. It was like a whole city in itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, any door, he said, that no admittance. He said, don't worry about that. He said, you just go through.
You had
the run of the boat. The run
of the boat.
So then after we were on there for 3 days, everybody treated us real, real swell,
mm-hmm.
And then they said that all those who wanted to fly home could do so. And there wasn't too many of us put up our hands, actually. I mean, I didn't put up mine for one, but then they decided it would be better if they did fly us home, and stopping at various points on the way, of course. We were in Guam for 6 days, where I ran into Tugby.
Mm-hmm. Did you fix him?
Yeah, I was the first one to beat him up.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, that was the first night, and Jack Glenn, he went over and he beat him up, and then they finally took him out of camp. And then we stopped at Honolulu, and then they flew us from Honolulu to San Francisco, where we had in the Berry Hill Hospital there. The Americans were tremendous, really tremendous for us. And then they...
What was your health at the time? Were they treating you all along there?
Yes. They in like in Guam and Honolulu and all these places, we were in the hospital, different checkups My big problem was getting enough meat.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a very big meat eater. Like the majority of the people, the men and that, they crave sweets.
Mm-hmm.
But not me, I wanted meat.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got sick when I started eating again. A lot of them did, you know. They as soon as they started eating solid foods and that, they got real sick. But I never did. I just went right back onto a full course meal and that was it.
Were your legs open sores then?
They were some of them were open, some of them were closed. Mm-hmm. The one used to break out, the big one, mm-hmm. used to break out all the time here. Mm-hmm. Once in a while it does yet.
That's just an ulcer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, there's nothing they can do about it. It's not the same. I got a few on my back and that. One thing and then we got into Vancouver. They got uniforms there, Canadian uniforms. Up until that time, we'd been wearing American uniforms.
And how'd they treat you in Vancouver?
Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. And we were there for about a week, I guess. And we had to run out of town of one thing or another. I had quite a few friends there. Met us at the train when we were coming through. People who had been from Winnipeg, and they knew we were coming through, you know, and they were down the train to see if they could meet anybody they knew and that. And I stayed at a couple of places. We didn't have to stay in barracks or anything like that. And I stayed at a couple of very good homes of friends of ours. And the Hills and St. Goddard's. And then came back to Winnipeg, where we were received with open arms, of course, by relatives and one thing or another. And I had to go down to the headquarters and that, and they gave us all the ration tickets we needed and everything like that. We could get all the food we wanted. They seemed to that anyway. And we were checked over thoroughly. I got back on October the 1st to Winnipeg. I didn't get discharged till the following May. I was in the Army exactly 6 years and 8 months, 9 months to the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you get married after you came back?
I got married after I came back, yes.
Mm-hmm. And did you did you get money paid to you by Japanese or any special money that were granted to prisoners of war or anything like that?
A long time after we came back. Like when we did get home, like we had all our back pay and gratuities and that coming to us. And of course we didn't feel like too much work at the time.
No. What did you do? Just go ahead. I'll give you a break for a while.
Well, we did quite a bit of drinking when we came back. Mm-hmm. And as I say, we weren't too interested in work around that time. We were more or less getting adjusted. And we got back in 45. Well, up until 46, I didn't do any work. And I went right back into sports, swimming. And then I played football with the St. Vital Bulldogs for 8 years. Built myself right back up again.
Did you get work?
And what was my first job when I came back? Oh, I tried out as a streetcar driver. And I stayed at that for, at the end of 46, in the wintertime, I got a job there. And I stayed through the winter. I stayed about 6 months, but it was too hard on the nerves as far as I was concerned, so I quit. And I started doing construction work, steel. Started working on boilers, and finally became a boiler mechanic, boiler maker. And it was on construction sites, so. And during the off season, I did various jobs. I worked down at the stockyards for quite a while. Worked at Eaton's for a bit. And then when the season would open up again. Well, in the summertime, I'd go back on construction again. And I was up north, up at Beaver Lodge. I was up there for a while, out of Edmonton for a year, I guess. I made good money up there. And then I came back, and I worked on the North Star refinery here. Did most of the work was on refineries, not worked on North Star refinery. Then when that finished up, I went down to Regina to do a job. And of course, I was married by then, and came back from Regina on the Saturday. And the Monday, they wanted me to go up to Medicine Hat. And I said, no, that's it. I quit. Didn't want to be away from the wife and family. So I got a job in Winnipeg here, and I was working at the stockyards for a number of years. And until I got cow jumped on me. I got hurt. I was in the hospital for a couple of days, concussion, one thing or another. And then I went to work in a plumbing wholesale, and been with the plumbing end ever since.
Mm-hmm. So boiler making and doing that type of work was your cup of tea?
Mm-hmm.
Not public, handling the public was not your...
No, mm-hmm. Not at that time.
No. I suppose you felt almost every day you had to be in touch with your buddies. Did you feel that way when you first came back?
Oh yes, oh yeah, we every day when we first came back we used to, well as you know the pubs used to open at 2 o'clock then.
Mm-hmm.
We all used to meet down at the Mall Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Stay there till it closes, and then probably go to a bootlegger's afterwards, and
mm-hmm.
crawl home in wee small hours in the morning. And we did this for two or three months, I guess.
But that sort of wore off.
You
needed each other
mm-hmm.
less and
right.
less and less.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Now.
Was resenting the beating he took, and he started swinging back at the Japanese, and they just took him and held him down and cut his head off right there.
In front of you guys?
In front of us.
So that was lesson number one?
That was lesson number one.
Mm-hmm. So no guard...
Discretion was the better part of valor.
Yeah. And no guard added a convenient accident at all?
No, not really. There was no way you could really give them a convenient accident.
I see.
Like down the mine, when we were working down the mines, it wasn't, we didn't have any guards down there, it was all civilians, civilian miners and that. And majority of them weren't too bad as long as you were doing your work and that. And which was very heavy. Like for instance, there was one night there was four of us put out 52 ton of coal.
That's an awful
lot. In one night. That's right. That's knocking it down and shoveling it into the cars.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't your quota, was it? Your quota was less than that.
It was less than that. But the thing was, you see, they gave you a quota. And if you did happen to finish it in time, they'd add a couple more the next day. One thing, another like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got everything they could out of you.
That was their job.
Oh yes, that was their job. That was their job.
How do you feel about your camp? How do you feel about it? Do you feel that there's something, you got something out of that experience, or do you think it was?
Yeah, a lot of headaches. it didn't do me any good.
No. You wouldn't do it again, would you?
No way. In fact, to the contrary, I think it did me a hell of a lot of harm as far as physically is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And
your nerves are not the same.
No, and I've got rheumatism so bad in my shoulders and arms, it's not even funny right now.
Do you bear resentment?
No. No, not... See, the thing with the Japanese, they had never taken prisoners before. And even their own soldier was very strictly disciplined also. And this was their way of, if they were punishing one of their own, was to beat him up. And that wasn't only the physical, as far as they were concerned, it was the loss of faith, which is a big thing in the Oriental mind. But as far as resentment against them now, I mean, it's just not there.
So, actually, the Japanese people are like anybody else, there's good and bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How do you feel about Chinese people? What you had to do with them?
Well, when we were first taken prisoner, we found that they had a large fifth column there. And like we found this out afterwards, we didn't have too much to do with them, actually, you know, and they didn't have too much to do with us. But we've seen quite a few atrocities as far as they were concerned, between the Japanese and the Chinese, and different things that they'd do to them. You know, just outside the camp where we could see them at that.
That was psychological too, wasn't it?
I imagine it would be, yes. Like, there's one instance where a young one, well, it's hard to determine her age, actually, but I would say she was a young one with a baby on her back and that. They set the dogs after her, and they tore her and the baby apart, of course. And other instances where...
Did they have guards on at your camp? Dogs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We killed one. Mm-hmm. When, just before this jacket deal, we killed one and ate it. And the Japs looked, they looked for weeks for that thing. Mm-hmm. They never could find it. There was six of us in on that. Mm-hmm. It was a good meal.
Probably kept you alive.
Yeah, you're right.
So I guess they're a little more careful with their dogs.
Yeah.
Do you think they figured you guys ate?
I believe they did.
Did you guys ever try to work your psychology against themselves? Did you try to play tricks on them in a psychological sense to make yourselves feel better? You know what I mean? Like to turn...
Well, when we were down the coal mines and that, we used to swear at the miners and everything else, you know, really swear at them, call them different names, one thing. Then we find out after it's all over, every one of them could speak English. Mm-hmm. Every one of them.
And yet they wouldn't give up.
They didn't divulge the fact that they could mm-hmm. understand and speak English. And they didn't do anything to us for calling names and that either.
So actually their mind is completely opposite in many ways. Like a Canadian wouldn't take that.
No.
Or
no.
A British or...
No, they're very stoic. Very stoic race, of course. And
how do you feel about wars in general? Do you think they're necessary evil? Or do you think we should get rid of them? Or do you think it's like...
Well, I think this one was necessary. In the sense that I like peace. Mm-hmm. I like to be free, mm-hmm. and which I don't think I would have been, and which if we ever have another one, I don't think we will be either.
You think we are too slack and we let things ride?
Yes. Let things get out of hand too far. I mean, as far as my opinion was concerned, I think that Thad has stepped in a lot sooner than what they did. That would never come to that. Mm-hmm. But it did, so.
And you don't have the big open face in other countries then. I don't think they're so pure and noble as they put up.
No way.
If some U.S. vets had anything to do with running the world today, there'd be more suspicions, wouldn't it? Because every generation seems to lose it.
Right. Well, I mean, we were the same when we were kids. I mean, we didn't realize the portent of it, or, you know, we went along. I mean, we were free. I mean, we had I mean, as far as Canada's concerned, they don't really know what a war is. They've never been bombed or invaded or anything else.
They've been gone hungry.
That's why you can't explain to these kids, you know. You just can't explain to them unless you've had the experience yourself and seen other countries and that, and the mess that war does make. I mean, you just can't get through to them.